Ms. Lisa H.
Holy shit, there's a lot of people here. Good morning. I made it 10 seconds without swearing. Do y'all do that down here? Hi. First, before I, start sharing, I want to make sure that I take a moment and thank the programming committee. I've never really loved the idea of being like a speaker in Narcotics Anonymous, because one of the gifts of my recovery is that I've been able to like have an education, right? And when you come from like circles of academia, like when I hear like speaker, I think it like means I'm here to teach you something, right? And that's not the way that we share in Narcotics Anonymous. That's not the way that I was lovingly taught here. I'm here to share my experience, strength, and hope with you. And I'm not everybody's cup of tea, I'll say that right now. Like I've got to check the temperature in the room before I drop an F-bomb. No kids, right? Like, if you bring your kid to an NA convention, like, that's like taking your kid to Lady Gaga in Vegas, right? you know what's up. And it's actually, it's super funny because we flew, I'm here with a group of people who flew in from, like, all over the country to come share. And here I am sitting next to a dude who's wearing a sweatshirt from my home region, right, from a convention that happened when I was, like, 6 years old. That's crazy. And those are the connections that we have in Narcotics Anonymous, is, like, I come to the middle of nowhere, Alabama, and meet somebody who's, like, from where I'm from, or at least knows where I'm from. But it's an honor and a privilege to be asked to come share my experience in Narcotics Anonymous. When I first got here, I heard people say shit like, you earned your seat here, kid. And, like, that's just not my experience, you know, My recovery is a gift of my higher power. When I was using, my grandparents bought me a funeral plot. I'm from northernish Pennsylvania. Like, Pittsburgh region is what we tell people, because if you say, like, the name of our little town, people are like, huh, okay. Like, they pretend to know where it is, but nobody actually does, right? But, like, my grandparents are from Erie. We're right on the Great Lakes. They bought me a funeral plot. Like, in our family's, like, little cemetery area, right? Because, like, when I was in active addiction, they didn't know that I was going to make it out. Like, that hole in the ground is that shit that I earned, right? Because, like, in my active addiction, I taught people how to treat me. I taught people what to expect from me. And then I get clean, and I'm like, well, I haven't used in a week. Why don't I get my whole life back? Right? Why don't you guys give me all that stuff? Well, right? Because that shit didn't happen overnight. We did not become addicted in one day. Right? So it's an honor to give back to this fellowship what was so freely given to me. Right? Like, by loving on you guys today, it helps me stay clean too. And, I love... So, like, the topic is loving without reservations. So, of course, like, one of the things I do is I look to the literature. Right? I have a friend who says, like, just tell the story and the topic will fit. And that is generally my experience. But, you know, I was checking out the Living Clean chapter on relationships today, which is, like, one of my favorite pieces of, like, our favorite chunks of all of our literature. And I honestly think it might be, like, our thickest chapter because, of fucking course it is, right? And, the first sentence of that chapter is that recovery doesn't happen in a vacuum, right? So, like, I don't do this by myself. I do it with all of you. My name is Lisa H., and I'm an addict. My clean date is February 25th, 2012, and I come from the Pittsburgh area. My home group is Monday Night Miracles in Meadville, Pennsylvania. Nobody knows where that is. Y'all are like, yeah, see, I told you. And, I like sharing on relationships in recovery because relationships were, like, such a huge theme for me. And it, like, starts all the way back at, like, the very beginning of my story. I was, like, we do that moment of silence for, like, the babies born into the disease without their consent. Right? That was me. I spent the first 2 weeks of my life detoxing in a NICU because my mother before me is a using addict. She has been my whole entire life, and I've never known her a day clean. Her mother before her died drinking. When my grandmother passed away, they told us that she had more tumors in her body than organs. Right? Like, we donated her body to science. Because honestly, it was a fucking miracle of science that she was even alive as long as she was. And, like, I watched her go through, like, she wrapped her car around telephone poles. She had DUIs. She, like, worked at a nonprofit in her town where she was, like, cooking the books and, like, embezzling money. And I'm like, Grandma, you're a fucking gangster. Right? And her mother before her, also addicted. Right? And I come from this, like, ancestral line of, like, bitter, resentful, abused, lonely women. Right? And the buck kept getting passed until the buck ran into me. And, like, when I talk about how my higher power works in my life, like, that shit is a miracle. So I'm born into addiction. And I had, like, a really fucked up, a fucked up concept of what love and what relationships looked like growing up, because, like, I grew up in Pittsburgh in, like, a boarded up trap house where I thought, like, a lot of shit was normal that was not normal. Y'all, I was 22 when somebody told me that it was child abuse to smoke crack with your mom. And it fucked me up, right? Last year, somebody told me that human trafficking is a part of my story, and I was like, excuse me, what? Right? So, like, even with 12 years clean, I'm still learning new shit about these relationships and what that stuff means to me. And, like, I'm going to talk about that a little bit today because, like, that shit is uncomfortable, but that's the stuff that, like, the magic of NA has brought me out of. Right? And I talk about it so that you can talk about it. And ladies, I'm not just talking to you, I'm talking to the men too. Right? Because that shit doesn't just happen to us. My parents split up when I was really little because my dad's a fucking asshole and can't... I shouldn't say that. The last time I shared about my dad from a podium, like, this old-ass dude came... And no, like, I love the old-timers. It's fine. But this old-ass dude, like, hobbled up to me, and I was talking about, like, my anger and relationships at one point, and he just... I never met this dude in my life. He hobbled up to me, and he goes, baby, you're still angry. And I was like, fuck you. Okay. I guess. That's all, like, occasionally that's how I react to having my inventory taken too, right? Like, initially I'm pissed off, but, like, they say, like, initially, like, the truth will set you free, but first it will make you mad, right? And I get that, like, anger, that fear response, right? Because it's fear, right? Like, that fear in relationships is what makes me have that, like, mean response. Right? If I perceive that, like, you are viewing something in me that is, like, less than wholesome or less than perfect, right? And you can see it and you can call it out, I'm afraid you're not going to love me anymore. Right? I felt that when I first got to this fellowship. I was scared. I was in and out of the other fellowship a little bit too, and I'll talk about that. I was so afraid when I got here, that if, like, you guys really knew, if you really knew who I was, you really knew what I did, what I'd been through, how I'd been broken, you would say, not that one. Not that one. Because, like, I had no grounds. Like, I know some people come in and they're like, oh, I just did this drug, or I never did it that way, right? Like, I will look for separate, different, and alone. I will try to disqualify myself because, like, you'll hear in my story in just a minute, like, that's what I was taught. Right? I was taught growing up that I was not a priority, that I was never going to be chosen, that I was not important. And I believed it. Right? You can only hear that shit for so long before you're like, well, I guess everybody must be right. You know? And I really thought that, like, that was going to be my experience when I came here, and it wasn't. Right? I'll tell you what that was like here in a second, but my parents split up when I was young, back to my asshole dad, because my dad cheats and marries and cheats and marries and cheats and marries, and he is currently, to my knowledge, we haven't spoken in quite some time, to my knowledge, he is currently on wife number 5, and my mom is on husband number 3, and her boyfriend lives with them. So you can see kind of like the map of relationships I had growing up, because, like, when you're a little kid, like, I didn't realize this until I worked some steps, but when you're a little kid, you're looking up at mom and dad thinking that's God, right? That's my first concept of a higher power. I'm learning everything from them, right? So I have this mom who's an addict, and my dad, this part is like my favorite part of telling my story. You want to hear what my dad did for a living? My dad is a retired PA narcotics cop. Yeah. So when it comes to addiction, not in my family, not my daughter. That shit's not a disease. That's a choice, right? Oh, if they put a needle in their arm, they deserve it. Somebody in my life told me a few years ago, when it comes to like loving without reservation, sometimes loving without reservation means loving my fucking self. And sometimes working a ninth step, working eight and nine, means putting myself on the list and becoming willing to make amends to myself, right? And somebody in my life, you know, within the last few years pointed out to me, like, you keep that door open. You know, like, why do they do it? Well, because sometimes I create a culture where they know that they can do it. Because they know that that door is still open. They know that I will leave it cracked and they will fucking kick it in every time, right? Part of my recovery, you know, like I made the decision right around 2015 that I wasn't going to talk to my mother anymore because I'm giving you guys some spoilers. I got married in 2015 and my mom showed up with her husband and her boyfriend, none of whom were invited. That husband at the time had actually been to prison on child pornography charges. Yeah. And they got high with my now ex, there's a plot twist too, there's a divorce in there, but my now ex-father-in-law. Right, they all got high together at my wedding, and my ex-father-in-law died of a drug overdose. I have to learn things the hard way sometimes in relationships. Like, I am an addict with a high pain tolerance, right? Sometimes I have to get absolutely, like, I have to get the shit kicked out of me. Sometimes I have to kick it out of myself, right, in order to learn lessons. I have to hurt in order to close doors, right? Nowadays, the pain is a little, like, it's, I'm less tolerant of the pain. You know, sometimes I can spot it a little bit sooner, but there are still areas of my life where, like, I'm staying here to work on it, right? I'm staying in Narcotics Anonymous to work on it. And I remember when my parents split up when I was younger, you know, one of the, like, most powerful snapshots I have of that time in my life was, like, the things my mom would say about my dad when we were doing like the Wednesday nights every other weekend thing and he would like never show up. I specifically remember times we were sitting like in my mom's car in like shitty parking lots waiting for my dad to come get us and he just wasn't. And my mom would say things like, well, he has a new family now, right? My dad had a couple more kids, right? I've got like a mess of brothers. You know, he has more kids now. He has sons, right? He doesn't need you. He doesn't want you, right? She said this shit to me. Thank God that stuff's illegal now, right? But it was so interesting because then, like, years later, I'm like 18, 19, 20 years old sitting in a Walmart parking lot waiting on my dope man, and I realized it was never my dad we were waiting on. It was never my dad we were waiting on. And, like, how the fuck are you going to have beef with, like, a six-year-old little girl? But Narcotics Anonymous and step work, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, have taught me that, like, my mother is a sick and suffering addict. It wasn't the beef that she had with me as 6, 7, 8 years old. It was the beef she had with herself. Right? Her own inner child was screaming. And I can look at her today, like, just another sick and suffering addict. And man, it's hard for me to like have like loving feelings towards her. And likewise, it's like kind of hard sometimes for me to have maternal feelings now, right? Because I didn't have a model for that, you know? But at least I have like the peace of being able to say like she's sick, you know? For the sake of time, I will share the thing that really catapulted me into active addiction and like especially fucked up my perception of relationships. Was that when I was 14 years old, my mom sold me to her dope man for an entire year of my life across state lines from Pennsylvania to Ohio. That's the human trafficking part, I guess. I don't know that I view it that way, but whatever, that's less important. She sold me to her dope man for an entire year of my life so that she could get high, right? And I'm going to tell you about it. Because, like, my fourth step, my fifth step, my sixth step, my steps have taught me that, like, that shit doesn't have power over me. Ooh, I can't look at you, but I love you. That shit does not have power over me today. Like, the emotions that I'm feeling right now are, like, that's the love, right? Like, Damn, Barb. That's the love of a woman sitting in the front row looking up at me who, like, I look up to her, right? She loves me when I'm messy, right? But for an entire year of my life, this man violently sexually abused me. He tied me down. He beat me with an electric bug zapper, right? He put a knife to my face and told me he would fuck it up if I told anybody. He said he would kill my family. He made me write about it in a journal and read it back to him. And I learned that the people who said they loved me, that's what love was. Right? I learned that love was pain and love was abuse. And the people who said they love me, ultimately, they will all abuse me. Right? That shoe will always fall. I will always be looking for it. Right? And I was 18 years old before I told my mother, and when I told my mother, she told me I was lying. So I also learned that love isn't safe, right? Love doesn't hold space for my experiences. Love doesn't receive my emotions. Love doesn't hold my secrets, right? Love doesn't hug my inner child and say, baby, it's okay. And that became my excuse to use. Right, was my search for love in all the wrong places. And that was like a chain reaction of shitty relationships and abuse like I got with people, men and women, don't get it twisted, right? Because like my disease does not discriminate. If you're going to offer me something, this is where love becomes transactional for me, right? I don't care what it looks like, how it walks, how it talks, right? If it can get me high, it can get me out of myself, I'm here for it. And I want more. And I want it yesterday. And fuck you if you're in the way. Right? And I become like a freight train in my relationships. And it is just a chain reaction of sickness. And, you know, I don't want to steal anybody else's thunder here. But, like, there's someone close to me who says, like, you can see how sick I was based on, like, the relationships that I was in at that time. Right? Because, like, I accept the love I think I deserve. When I'm not connected to higher power and I'm not connected to step work and I'm not connected to you. So when I got to Narcotics Anonymous, that love was so uncomfortable, right? Because I was always waiting for, like, when is that shoe going to drop? When is all of Narcotics Anonymous going to decide that they love me the same way everybody else loves me? And y'all taught me, like, okay, 1, 2, and 3, like, seek a higher power, find God. Right? How the fuck am I supposed to find, like, okay, so backstory. My family is Catholic. And, you know, the God of my understanding as a child is like the God of fire and brimstone, right? Is the God of, like, you do certain things, you're going to hell, right? And that's just my experience. So in my mind, it's like, okay, I'm supposed to trust, like, Heavenly Father. Right? Because that concept is like masculine in my little brain, right? How am I supposed to trust Heavenly Father? I jokingly call him an invisible sky daddy, right? How do I trust, you guys love that. How do I trust invisible sky daddy, right? When I can't trust my fucking dad on earth who I can see and call and talk to on the phone and hug when I see him once every 10 years. That doesn't compute for me, right? NA taught me that, like, that higher power can be whatever I need it to be as long as it is loving and caring and greater than me. I fucked around when I first got here for, like, quite some time. It was probably, like, a year before I even worked a step because, you know, I got hemmed up on some shit that, like, forced me into NA this time. And I kind of got hemmed up with, like, a... Do y'all know what that means down here? Hemmed up, like I got in trouble. Okay. Listen, we went to breakfast this morning, and I always forget until I'm like in the moment. Like where I come from, I order my eggs dippy, right?
Yeah, we don't know what that is.
I don't know what the fuck that is anywhere else. And all my friends are like, "Oh, it's over easy, it's over medium." I'm like, I don't know which fucking one it is. I just like them dippy. I don't know, right? I have no idea what I was saying.
You got hit up.
Hemmed up, yeah. I got in trouble right around the same time as like another little group of addicts. You know how we all kind of come in like cohorts or like little classes? Like I got clean with these five people, right? I got in trouble with some people that like I knew what shitbirds they were on the street because like I was right there with them, right? And I remember I watched one of these dudes. He's not in the fellowship anymore, which that's a whole other thing. But I watched him pick up his one-year key tag. And I remember thinking, like, you motherfucking liar. Because I thought y'all were not telling the truth, right? I thought y'all were, like, you get, like, a hall pass to, like, drink one day a week or, like, y'all, like whatever it is. I thought you guys were not, like, smoking crack on Thursdays. I don't know. But I remember watching him pick up his key tag and thinking, like, wait a minute, like, maybe it's not a lie because I knew what you were on the street and you know what I was on the street and it's working for you and I've been sitting here watching it work. And like, yo, your life looks like something I might want a piece of. And I got a sponsor and I got a home group and I got in service and I still have a sponsor, right? An NA sponsor who has an NA sponsor. And I am still in service to this fellowship and I still have a home group, right? And man, no matter how much those motherfuckers rub me, I try to love them unconditionally and be a part of the change, right? Because sometimes, like, home group, when we talk about love and home group, right? They really are like family, and that shit's not always pleasant. And my concept of family is fucked up, too, right? It's probably why I'm here with all these fucking people back there, right? Calling them family, look at us, right? I wouldn't have it any other way. So I want to share a little bit about what it's been like since I got here because, you know, my relationship with relationships and loving without reservation has also changed a lot. I think when we think about the word relationships, we all think of, like, romance, right? Those are not the only relationships that I have held, but I want to make sure that, like, I share about that too because it is such a huge and important part of my life. When I got clean in 2012... it was suggested to me to, like, not get into a relationship in the first year. And I don't know if that works or if anybody has ever fucking done that. Good for you. That's amazing. I bet it was awesome. Because I can tell you, I'll jump ahead a little bit. The little bit of time I had, like, in between my divorce and my current relationship, like, in my own fucking apartment, doing my own thing, focusing on myself, was amazing. Having a space... listen, I love my family, I love my man, I love our kids, but having my own space for that time with nobody else in it, I would like leave and go to work and come back and it's like exactly the way I left it. Yeah. And like the towels are in the basket, not on the floor next to the basket. That's loving without reservations, right? When I can see that shit and not like burn the house down, right? My disease wants to. They told me not to get into a relationship. I got clean in February. I met a boy in April, and 3 weeks later, I moved in with him. Because fuck your suggestions. I have to learn the hard way, right? And, you know, some things transpired in 2014. I was diagnosed with cervical cancer. And it opened up, like, a whole new can of resentment for me because at that point in my life, like, I thought that, like, all of my abuse stuff was resolved in step work. I thought, like, the shit that, like, my mind forgets or I get emotionally okay with, like, sometimes my body remembers. You know, and when they told me that, like, I had cancer at a young age, probably because of the abuse that I went through when I was a teenager, can opened, right? Resentful, angry, hostile, all over again, right? And right around the same time, my ex-husband and I decided that we were going to try to start having a family. And that did not go as planned. Because in my brain, I'm like, okay, social acceptability, right? I have the house, I have the man, I have the job, I have the education, right? Everything is good. All I need now is the babies. And I'm going to build the family that I didn't have. And I'm going to make that shit right, right? And I'm going to have a life filled with love. And God had another plan. My understanding of God had another plan. And in 2017, I had three extremely traumatic miscarriages. They were, like, all near-death experiences. And, like, the really crazy part about all of that is, like, Narcotics Anonymous never left my side, right? There were women in the fellowship who were, like, by my bedside. I did a year of chemo. Not once did I go by myself, right? When I took methotrexate and my hair got patchy, not once was I ever by myself. Not once did anybody go, fuck, you're busted. They said, no, you're sick and we love you anyway. Sometimes we love you because of it. And I'm going to tell you about the worst thing I ever did clean, right? And I don't always include this, but I do think that it's important because it relates to like loving without reservations and having people in my life who know the worst of me, who still love me anyway, right? In 2018, after these miscarriages, after cancer, and I'm not justifying, but this is how I felt, right? I'm feeling so inadequate. I'm feeling so small. I'm feeling like the things that like my body should be able to do, the things that like I should be able to give my husband, the things that like should be resonating just aren't. And I was pulling away from the program. I was pulling away from my support base, right? My point of freedom getting lower, right? I was giving away parts of myself. And I had an affair in my marriage, right? And I had to get honest about that shit. And I had to come into meetings and I had to talk about it because I knew, like, fuck, I'm going to get high. Right? You take the drugs away and I can still use a whole bunch of shit to get outside myself. And I had a friend who loved me enough years later to say, like, you never did it before that. You have never done it since. Why the fuck? Nobody cares about it but you. It was a one-time thing. It's not who you are. Right? And I got the time warning, so I got to be careful. But there's a couple more important things I want to make sure that I share on this topic. Right around that time, I was sponsoring a woman who had a husband, and she got pregnant, and they had a baby. And they asked me to be her godmother. And for me, that was like a really beautiful kind of restorative, loving moment that like NA brought into my life. And this little baby... Her husband also had a sponsor at the time, and they asked him to be her godfather, right? So me and him start, like, having little chats about, like, oh, okay, we might, like, be friends. We kind of vibe. Like, what does it mean to, like, have this role in this little child's life? We're not Catholic, right? That's a very Catholic thing. And we're talking about, like, what does it mean to do this in, like, the context of the 12-step fellowship? Because, like, mom and dad are in recovery. We're in recovery, you know. And that guy was really persistent. Because, like, in my mind, I was talking about, like, that time after my divorce when I was, like, by myself, working on myself, and I was like, nope, we're not dating, we're not doing that. And I never wanted a relationship with someone else inside the fellowship. I never had one until now. And, you know, this man is a part of my life today. He's going to be my husband in a couple months. That's a whole thing. Yeah. I like him. And he has two sons, you know, and like I get to be a mom today, you know, I get to show up for those little kids, especially the little one, right? And they've never known us using. So like the vision that like I prayed for, higher power still made it possible. I just had to like kind of go through some shit first, and I had to like, you guys loved me straight through that. But like the love end on the romance side, and I'll say this and then I'll shut up, Will. The women of Narcotics Anonymous also taught me how to have a healthy relationship in NA, because like if you don't know who my dude is, you probably don't know. Because like we don't go to meetings together a lot. Right? If we do, we drive separately. I sit with the women. He sits with the men. I don't fuck with his home group. He doesn't fuck with mine. Right? Our sponsors are back there kikiing, but like we don't bring them into our shit. Right? I'm not like, Will, fucking get your dude, bro. Right? you know, and if I get high, I'm confident that he stays here. And if he gets high, I'm confident that I stay here. Right? We did not use together. We have multiple years when we made this a thing, right? He has his and I have mine. And that's a blessing. That's a boundary, right? Because like boundaries are a big part of love that I had to learn here too, because I didn't come with that shit built in. No way. No way. Right? And today, loving without reservations, we were kind of talking about this on the way down here. Is it possible to love without reservation? I don't know. I think that's still a part of my process. But I think the without reservation part is like, when that shit does come up for me, I kick it out to you guys, right? I say the shit that like my disease doesn't want you to know. When I feel insecure or I feel like, hey, that thing just happened and like I'm feeling shitty about it, you know, trusting that like that's going to be received and it's going to be okay and people are going to love me anyway with that shit on board. Right? So even though my disease says, don't say that thing, they won't love you anymore, I do it anyway. Because like it's either that or get high. You know? Loving without reservations, like I said, I'm not sure if it's possible to totally love without reservation, but today I'm able to love in like the safety and security of the fellowship, knowing that like I'm promised one thing in Narcotics Anonymous, and that is freedom from active addiction, right? I got to do it because Jen did it, right? Like our message is that an addict, any addict, can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. And that is what the unconditional love of Narcotics Anonymous has taught me. I'm Lisa H. I'm an addict.
Our next speaker is Troy S.
Addict. My name is Troy. I ain't going to throw this at you. It just makes me feel safe, so I bring it up here with me. So, man, I don't know who that girl came here with, but she's going home with me. My sponsor told me to say that. So, when I didn't know what the topic was until at the beginning of the week. I think I asked Lisa. I was like, fuck are we talking about? You know, and she told me, and man, that threw me for a loop for a second, because I presented that question to her. I says, is it possible to love without reservation? So I'm at work for a couple days, and I'm like chewing on that. I'm like, is that possible? And at first I was like, I don't think it is, you know, and I'm like, because I'm an addict, right? And I think about shit, and I overthink about shit. Hey, thanks, man. I'll probably knock this thing over before I'm done. And then I went back and I prayed about it, and I come back into work the next day and I'm thinking about it again. And I'm like, no, that's possible. Because I was thinking about it, I says to Lisa last night, I said, I know it's absolutely possible because this is how I know. I got two kids, and my oldest son's mother, I was in a relationship with her for a long time, and I love her. I love her, but it's a different kind of love. Right? I love her as I respect her as the mother of my child. But that love is not the same anymore, right? It's never going to be what it was. And I wouldn't want it to be, you know? But I learned that in Narcotics Anonymous, right? Because I when I first heard it, when I was thinking about it, I'm like, you know, how easy is it for us to fucking love newcomers, right? You know, like when I see a new guy, like I have zero expectation of you. Right? I know you're fucked up. Right? I know. Like, it's okay, dude. You can come in here. You just got done, you know, being in rehab, whatever, you know. You're out there fucking smoking crack, shooting dope. I don't care. You know, I know what you're about. Got the fucking tough guy street shit on, you know. I get that. You know, and I can vibe with that. I'm like, all right, dude, you're cool. You know, and no judgment. Now, you come in with, like, 5, 6, 7, 20, 30 years clean and you're acting like an asshole, I'm like, yes, motherfucker. You know, like, we reading the same book, dude? You know what I mean? Like, what's going on? But you see, that's how that goes here, right? Because I got into the literature a little bit about this, and I read a line in the basic text, and I'm probably going to mess it up. It said, you know, love is the free transfer of energy from one to another. You know? And I was like, that's a pretty good definition, right? Because that's what I got here, you know, and that's how I got to be clean and to stay here, right? So a couple of things about love unconditionally, what you just heard. I knew all that stuff that Lisa shared, and I choose to love her, not in a meeting, all the time. because I love who she is as a person. And Narcotics Anonymous taught me that. Right? So, because people had to love me. Because listen, man, even to this day, you know, there's times where, you know, Narcotics Anonymous has to tolerate me. Right? Because on any given day, I'm the sick and suffering addict too. I'm just not putting anything in me. Right? So, we do have like a little bit of a different background. Sometimes, this is the first time we've ever shared together. So I'm like, she's like going first. And I'm like, fuck, man. Like, she's way better at talking than I am. First of all, but like, you know, she's got like that story. I always love that story, man. Because she has a lot of passion and a lot of love in that. And I love that. But I'm from Western Pennsylvania. I don't like being affiliated with fucking Pittsburgh. I grew up in a small town in north part of Pennsylvania, and the people from Pittsburgh would come up there, and we call them my peers because they're my peer from Pittsburgh to kill a deer. That's what they're doing, right? And they're fucking up my hunting. And I don't want to go back down to the river where you belong, you know? So I grew up on a farm. And my home life was like, all right, man, my parents loved me. You know what I mean? Like, they did the best they could with what they had. You know, and the longer that I'm in recovery, the longer I'm in the step working process, the more I realize that my parents, I have so much empathy for them, right? Like, my house wasn't without sickness. You know, like, that, it was definitely present. Alcohol and other substances were just a part of the game. Right, my dad worked hard and he played hard. Like, that's how he went down. When I was growing up, we liked to get blackout drunk in fields. You know, we're in Alabama, right? You guys do that shit. That shit. You know, so like, it don't matter. It crosses state lines. So that being said, my dad though was he was a hard dude, man. And so was my grandfather, and like I like when Lisa shares about like the lines, you know, where we come from, because like when I first got to recovery, I used to put so much focus on, like, why, like how did I get here, right? Like, how did this happen to me, you know? And I think it's common, you know, but after a while, I didn't give a fuck how it happened. You know, I just didn't want to feel or be what I was anymore. You know, I just wanted you to tell me, how the fuck do I stop using? Right? And like, I didn't want to hear a simple answer. Right? I didn't want to hear go to a meeting. I didn't want to hear like work the 12 steps. You know, like, I got that 1-3 and fucking 12. You know, 1-9 and 12. I'm sorry. I can't use, I'm sorry, let me tell you how to stay clean. You know? I didn't get it, man. I missed all the meat and taters in there. You know, my definition of what love was, my parents split when I was young. I was always more of a mama's boy myself, still am to this day. I love my mother. And my dad was, I remember my dad always shared this. My dad told me, well, before I got clean, I can remember two times he said he was proud of me. When I started my first college football game and when I graduated from college. Right? There's only two times he ever said that to me that I can recall. Right? Other than that, I thought love was based on, like, performance. You know what I mean? Or what you did, you know, kids were better to be shut the fuck up, stay over there, keep your mouth shut, that kind of thing. And, you know, I think love was I had a very weird look at it, you know. I knew my mother loved me, that's for sure, but that was more of like a enabling love, I think, is the way I viewed it. But when I got to NA, you know, I was a pretty angry guy. For a lot of reasons. And I think the love that I experienced here was just something that was completely new to me. You know, like, you're going to love me just because? You know? Like, fuck you mean, dude? You know? And I didn't completely understand that. You know, I didn't understand. I remember the first person that hugged me in a meeting. I see her to this day, a couple times a year at conventions or campouts. Her name is Brenda, and she is fucking awesome. And I remember, it's not the first person that hugged me at any meeting. It's the first person that hugged me when I moved back home after I had gotten clean. I walked into a meeting, and I was fucking terrified, right? Because I moved home. I'd been gone for a year. I moved home. And I show up to this meeting, and this woman's standing at the door, and she hugged me, man, and she gripped me up so hard. And I'm a big fucking guy, right? And so, like, I'm, like, giving it back to her, and she just kept giving it to me, you know? And I needed that hug so bad. I really did. Because I was terrified. Because I had to come home. And I didn't want to. I don't know why that just hit me right now, but it did pretty hard. I just remember what that felt like for a second. And, excuse me. So, those are the moments that Narcotics Anonymous gives me and enables me to be like the person I need to be for my family and for everybody else, right? Because, like, not to stay in, like, the past of it too much, but, like, at the end of the day, man, I could tell you, we could talk about all the war stories and all the bullshit, but ain't nobody want to hear that shit. You know what I mean? At the end of the day, you know, I started using when I was 12 fucking years old. I didn't stop till I was 27. A lot of shit happened in between with jail, with rehabs, with all the stuff, you know. And at the end of it, I couldn't fucking quit sticking a needle in my arm, you know. Ain't much more to talk about, right? But that's it. It's the same old fucking story. So, during that process, you know, I remember my first overdose, right? And I woke up and I was fucking tied to a bed. And I found out why shortly thereafter, because this nurse come in, little skinny blonde girl, she had a black eye. And I found out that I did that to her. You know, I don't remember it. But at the end of the day, it's kind of, we can kind of laugh about it now. Even my dad laughs about it just a little bit. It's like, they brought me out of the overdose too soon, and I was leaving. I was leaving. I wasn't supposed to leave, but me, I was leaving. And they were trying to stop me, and, you know, in the melee, she got hurt. And I felt so bad about that at the time. But, like, my brain was so fucked up that the first thing I thought about when I woke up was, like, well, shit, I can't do fentanyl anymore. God damn it. You know? And, like, I always think about that, you know? About, like, that's where my mind went. Was, like, I can't do that. Not, like, hey, man, maybe you just can't get high. Like, there was none of that. You know, and I always think back about that moment. I remind myself of that because that's how I know that I belong here, right? So, that was a tough one, man. But when I couldn't stop, you know, anybody that got in the way, man, I was stepping on, right? And that's why I said in the beginning, when I get a new guy and he likes the tough guy shit, you know, the street mentality, that kind of stuff. Like, I love that because I came in, like, that was my environment for a lot of years, right? And I got this sponsor, I got clean, they told me, like, a lot of shit, right? I feel like one of them guys, like, when I first got here, you'd always hear the guys that were like, well, not back in my day, you know, and they say that shit. And that always made me laugh. But now I feel like I'm doing that. Like, well, back in my day, they weren't nice to me. They fucking told me how it was. And, but they did, though. And, I remember I had this, my first sponsor. He looked at me, and he was a big guy like I was. You know, he goes, tough guys don't get clean. He's like, you leave that shit at the door. And I can say that that's true. Because here's the thing, man. If I stay in the step working process, that shit goes away. It's not going to be here no more. Right? So, I think about that when I came in and those men that loved me back to life. Because I remember the last time I used. I remember the last time I used and the last time I put a needle in my arm and I woke up the next day and I was so fucking mad. that I had to do it again. What do I have to do and who do I have to get over on to get the next one? And I don't forget that shit. Right? I don't forget that because I remember that last shot, man. Because I wanted that last one to be the last one. I didn't want to get up. Right? I didn't want to wake up and do it again. And I said, God, I need help. And I didn't even know what I was praying to. I need help, right? And I'd done that before, so I was a little gun-shy because one time I did that and the Pennsylvania State Police showed up and they took me to fucking jail. And I got clean. You know what I mean? And so now, like, I'm really careful with prayers. Like, sometimes I'll get specific. You know, I know we're not supposed to do that, but like, I'm like, hey, dude, listen. Try to pull some chicken shit on me. The reality of that was God showed up, man, and I remember it was my dad and my best friend from college, and they said, you know, they found me. I was in Washington, D.C. Long story. Don't need to get into that. My dad looked at me and he said, I don't want to watch you kill yourself no more. And I was like, I'd heard that plenty of times, you know, from various people over the years. And for some reason that moment, and this is recovery, man, this is God. Right? I said, okay, I'll go. And like, I don't know where that came from because like on the surface, I'm still fighting. You know, I'm like, no, dude, like I'm not going nowhere. Right? And that came out. And so like I ended up going, right? And like that's how the journey starts. Right? So like, I don't want to stick there too long. But you know, I ended up going up to Erie, Pennsylvania. In Erie, we get a lot of fucking snow. It was February. My clean date's 2/15/15. Next week, hopefully, we're celebrating a decade. I think I'm going to still be here. Yeah. You know? If you've ever been to Erie, Pennsylvania, I don't know if you have. Some of you may have. You've got to start to lift shirt on. We do that shit up there. And but we get a lot of snow, and it's fucking cold, dude. I have burned all the dope, man, so like nobody was coming to get me. And I remember back then it was a little different. Like, I mean, I know states are a little different in how they utilize treatment and stuff like that. But the doctor looked at me and he goes, you're young and you're healthy. Sweat it out. And I said, what did you say to me? And I found out what he meant. Because I know the deal, bro. Like, if we're going to rehab, you're going to give me the comfort meds and the Suboxone and the shit. Like, we're good. Like, we're good. You know, and it wasn't that. They didn't do that. You know? So I felt that shit, man. Every time I've gotten clean, it's been cold turkey. And usually it was because I went to jail. But anywho, so like that's where the journey began, man. And like I said, I ended up in this place. It was east of Pittsburgh. And it was different. But they were cool, man. They helped me out a lot. And, you know, them guys showed me what love without condition was, even though they weren't very nice on the surface. They took me in. They bought me meals. They told me, you know, like what I needed to do on a daily basis to get another day. And, like, that's what I did, you know. Because after a little while, right, like, I didn't want to be in Narcotics Anonymous, right? Because when I got here, I looked at you, and I was like, you didn't use like I did. You don't look like me. You know, or whatever, dude. You guys talk fucking funny down here. You know what I mean? I'd find any reason or any excuse. On that note, after this, I need somebody to explain to me the Roll Tide thing, too. I'm sure somebody will. I'm not going to open the door, but I met this guy at my business last year, and he was from Alabama, and he says, like, we're talking, and, like, in conversation, he just inserted that. And I'm like, dude, that, like, doesn't even fit here. Like, what are we... What are we doing? So, anyways, we don't need to get into all that. But anyway, you know, when those guys showed me all the things that they showed me, they did it through their action, right? And, like, that's what I've learned in Narcotics Anonymous, that this is about action, right? And love's a fucking action word, too, right? How do I show that? I can express love through unity, right? It says that in our Living Clean, right? So, like... How do I do that? I don't like everybody in Narcotics Anonymous. I don't. And if you say you do, Fucking look at that shit, man. Like, you fucking ain't being honest. Like, let's go. But here's the deal. Here's the deal. You gotta love everybody here. Right? Doesn't mean you gotta come back to my house and hang out. But what it does mean is I'm gonna have to love you, right? And I've had trials with that over the years, man. I had a fucking flat out argument with this dude outside of my home group last year. And if he was 20 years younger and not 50 pounds overweight, I'd have fucking floored him right in the parking lot. You know, that was God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself because he had me so mad. You know, and I said, man, I remember that first sponsor. You can't put your hands on nobody no more, you know? And that's not usually my demeanor anyways. And is that who I want to be in Narcotics Anonymous? Fuck no. You know? No, I don't want to be that guy ever. So my kids, you know, I got to touch on that a little bit because last year about this time, my youngest son, his mother committed him to the psych ward. And that was really difficult because he didn't belong there. And he stays with us full time now. He doesn't have contact with her anymore. And that was a tough, this last year was tough, man. You know, loving him through that. And, you know, Lisa, she always jokes about like me as a kid. And I'm like, dude, there he is. Like, that's me. That fucking, that kid. And, you know, that loving without reservation piece, right? Is I remember the first time I had my boys by myself when I moved home. And I didn't know what to do with them. I didn't know. What I didn't know was I didn't know how to emotionally connect with my kids. Right? So I called my sponsor. And I'm like, what do I do? You know? I keep them alive. I'm going to feed them some fucking chicken nuggets and we're good, right? And we're going to watch Thomas the Train for the 50th time. It's going to be great. You know, them kids, man, he said, just be there. Put your fucking phone down and be there. And that's what I did, man, and I learned how to emotionally connect with my children by doing that, right? So my youngest son, recently, you know, he's been doing really good. He's living with us again and all that stuff. But when we went through the psych ward thing, man, I remember going into the psych ward to see him, and he's fucking 9, dude. You know what I mean? Like, that was, he had the grippy socks on, you know, and I'm like, bad sleepover, bro, if you got grippy socks on, you know? And I get there and he says, Dad, these people are crazy. I'm like, dude, like, you know, like, this is where they take them. Like, this is where we go when we're like that. And he said to me, this was the hardest thing ever, dude. He says, Dad, can you get me out of here? And I couldn't. Because in the state of Pennsylvania, when you commit a minor under the age of 14, you lose your parental rights for 72 hours. And if you want to talk about powerless, there it was. It wrecked me, dude. It did. And because I couldn't protect my little boy. Because if there's anything I can do, you know, it's drilled into me as a man. It's that I can protect my kids, right? My family. Right? And I couldn't. So when I got him out of there, he never went back to that fucking environment. You know? Ever again. And hopefully he never does, but, you know, that's another thing, man. Because that's the thing, dude, because I got to have some compassion here and learn how to love people where they're at. His mother and I, Lisa was stealing my shit, real for real, in that last share. Because I'm the one that always says, like, hey, you want to know how sick I was? Look at my relationship track record. Right? When I was with his mother, I was pretty sick. And, you know, she's got a place here too, man. She just ain't found it yet. You know, she went to the other fellowship for a little while, and, like, that was all good and fun. But when she identified as having a problem, principles had to come into play, right? Because what about all that shit you talk, right? This is what my mind's telling me, right? She's a fucking newcomer now, right? You want to drag her through the mud? You want to do all that stuff? No, I don't. But what I did learn was, you know, she can have her pathway to recovery and I don't need to fucking stand in the way. but I'm staying out of it. You know what I mean? Like, I want no part of it. So my son, you know, he gets to experience, both of my boys do, what it is, what is loving without condition. Because my kids know, without a doubt, you know, because they've said it to me before. You know, my youngest son, the best compliment he ever gave me, he said, "Dad, your house is just calmer. I feel safe." Right? That's like the number one thing I can give to my children. Right? So, that's the best compliment I could ever get. You know, and they know that when they're there, they're like, "I don't care, dude. Like, I don't give a shit what you do. You, anything that you're going to do, I probably did it. And I probably did it more fucked up." You know what I mean? Like, it's just the way it is. Right? But through the love of Narcotics Anonymous, like when I got here, again, like I shared, I didn't want to be here. But at the end of the day, like, there was obviously a piece of me that did want to be here. Like, I'm a firm believer too, and like, we don't earn our seat here, right? I'm blessed with a seat here. But if I want to keep it, I gotta fucking earn it. Right? So like, what's that mean? Same thing, dude, that was shared before me. Like, I still have a sponsor, I still work steps, I still have a home group, I'm still in service to Narcotics Anonymous, and you know what the most important thing I do is I answer the fucking phone when somebody calls me, because somebody told me a long time ago, the winners in Narcotics Anonymous answer the phone, right? And I want to be a winner, right? I want to be a winner, because that's a kind of a thing all on its own there, but the love of Narcotics Anonymous gave me the ability to look at you and say, I don't really give a fuck where you come from or what you did, you know? I just want you to get another day, because there ain't nothing more beautiful than that in our fellowship. And I think I'm out of time, so it's a good day to be clean. Thank you.